Good morning, New Mexico. Welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're broadcasting from the Santa Fe Baking Company, streaming on the web at ksfr.org, podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org, thanks to Dot Foil Computer Services, and we're at facebook.com/radiocafe. I'm very happy now to welcome to the program Harry Shearer. He is writer and director of the award-winning documentary The Big Uneasy, which will be screened on Saturday, the 2nd of April at 8 o'clock at the CCA here in Santa Fe. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thanks very much.
So this is a film about the many ways in which Hurricane Katrina was a human rather than a purely natural disaster. And the bad guys in many ways in your film are the Army Corps of Engineers. What prompted you to tell this story?
Yeah, well, first of all, let me just make a correction in case people think I'm saying that a hurricane was caused by folks. Hurricane Katrina, as it hit the Mississippi Gulf Coast, was indeed a natural disaster, and the damage it did in the Mississippi Gulf Coast was a natural disaster of serious proportions. But by the time it bypassed New Orleans, and it never got to New Orleans proper, it had been downgraded to a strong Category 1 or weak Category 2 by the National Hurricane Center. And so all the flooding that people saw in New Orleans, the hurricane itself did a little wind damage. You saw what happened to the windows in the hotel and the roof of the Superdome. But basically the flooding was caused by the catastrophic failure in more than 50 locations of a so-called hurricane protection system, which had been built over, almost completed, over 4.5 decades by the Army Corps of Engineers. And I'm an adopted New Orleanian, and as I lived in the city in the weeks and months after the flood occurred, we were treated in our local media to the day-by-day interim reporting of the results of two independent investigations into the flooding, because two different teams of scientists and engineers looked at what the Corps was saying about what had happened, and then looked at the available evidence and said, this doesn't fit. And so they started doing investigations, and their final reports in many ways dovetailed almost completely in blaming the flooding on these failures, basic engineering failures, failures of judgment, failures of decision-making by the Corps over 4.5 decades under administrations of both political parties. And yet, almost none of this information got out to the nation at large. People still thought, as they did the day after the floodwaters receded, big storm, city below sea level, poor black victims. So when President Obama came to New Orleans in October of 2009 and told a town hall meeting that the flooding was a natural disaster, to the faces of people who knew better but who adored him because they had voted for him, I asked myself, why would he do that? Surely he's a well-informed person. Surely he must know better. Probably he's pandering to the ignorance of the nation at large. So I decided that despite having done radio broadcasts about this and having blogged about it, something more was needed, and so that's when I decided to make this film.
The failure of the levees, the flood walls, the pumps, all of these you talk about and are reported by people whom you feature in the film. And in response to their attempt to keep the public safe, they were fired, demoted, ostracized.
Mm-hmm.
Why?
I guess that's the way the modern world works. The Army Corps of Engineers is a very special part of the government. It does not cotton well to being criticized, either from within or from without. You mentioned a whistleblower in the film who is within the Corps of Engineers and whose job it was to test and then supervise the installation of the pumps that are at the heart of the new system, the new improved system built since 2005. And her reporting is that the pumps never passed their tests and were installed anyway and can't work during a hurricane. Now, that's disturbing news for the Corps, which has just gotten $15 billion of our dollars to do the same thing again, hopefully better, and now are being told, no, it's got a fatal flaw. And so their response is, rather than to deal with the problem, is to silence those who call attention to it. A couple months ago, a State Department official told the Washington Post that the problem of dealing with corruption in Afghanistan was what he called a culture of impunity. And I think that's exactly what we have with the Corps of Engineers. There is no meaningful oversight of them either from within or outside the agency. They have a very cozy relationship with Congress. So they're not used to having to respond to informed criticism. And so their way of dealing with it is to say, shut up.
We're talking to Harry Shearer about the film The Big Uneasy. A piece of the story that I didn't know was the story of an Army Corps of Engineers project called Mr. Go. What was that, and what does it have to do with the Katrina disaster?
Well, Mr. Go is the acronym for the Mississippi River Gulf Outlet, which was a project that the Corps started pitching along with some members of the New Orleans business community in the late 1950s, or even earlier, as a way of shortcutting the Mississippi River and getting ships from the Gulf of Mexico to the port of New Orleans. If you look at a map, the Mississippi is a very windy river, and the Corps, one of their specialties over the years has been to say, you know, curves aren't good, we like straight lines, you do too. So this was a project to build a straight line path from the Gulf of Mexico to the heart of the city of New Orleans, to the port. Even then, even as this was being proposed, the then nascent environmental movement said, you're crazy, you're going to, A, cut open the wetlands to the east of New Orleans, which are very important. They provide a buffer, cypress forest buffer against hurricanes. And two, you are going to funnel storm surge during a hurricane from the Gulf of Mexico straight into the heart of the city. The Corps proceeded to build it. It was never the economic boon that it was supposed to be. By the time it was built, it was too shallow for most modern shipping. But it did do the two things that environmentalists predicted. It did destroy a huge swath of coastal wetlands, cypress forest, thereby depriving New Orleans of an important buffer against the ferocity of hurricanes. And it did funnel storm surge straight to the heart of the city, the flooding in the Lower Ninth Ward and St. Bernard Parish to the east of the city were almost totally due to the existence and the depredation of the Mississippi River Gulf Outlet. Since the flood, Congress has ordered it to be closed, so the Corps has built a closure at one end to keep it from doing that again. But it can never be filled in. One of the scientists in the film tells us that they moved more earth than they did to build the Panama Canal to build it. So it can never, you know, it's never going to be filled in. It's just going to be this big, static, water-filled ditch for the rest of time.
One of the lessons that one takes away from the film is that natural and biological systems, as you're saying, wetlands and so on, tend to work much better than engineered systems in many cases, like protecting from hurricanes, all kinds of things. And we seem in this country not to really understand that natural systems, and even using engineering, incorporating the principles of natural systems, is something we should do. The Dutch get this. You have this several places in the film where you talk about conversations with Dutch engineers and what we can learn from them. Why do they get it and we don't?
They've had 700 years of experience, trial and error, at trying to protect a country that is 70 to 80% below sea level. So they've had more urgency. They've had a more, I think, open-minded approach. When they try something and it doesn't work, they don't do it again. They try something else. As a matter of fact, we didn't have time in the film to report this, but it's a fairly stunning fact. The Dutch had a big flood in 1953, and they went all around the world looking for answers, you know, things that they could incorporate into their systems. And one of the places they went to in 1953 was New Orleans, which then as now has the biggest, most efficient pumps in the world for pumping out rainwater. It rains very hard in New Orleans, and these pumps, the so-called wood pumps, they're named after the man who invented them, they're not made of wood, are capable of pumping in the first hour 2 inches out of the city and an inch every hour thereafter. The Dutch came to New Orleans and learned about those pumps. We can't return the favor, apparently, up till now. But you're right. Natural systems and mimicking natural systems is the way the Dutch are pointing. And, of course, if you rely on natural systems, you know, there's a part of the political economy that doesn't get fed, the large construction companies that feed on Corps of Engineers contracts. And there's a guy who wrote a book last fall. He teaches at Loyola, and he's now in the Obama administration, Rob Virchik. And he writes about how one reason why we don't appreciate natural systems and the services they provide to us is because we have not learned to assign a dollar value to them. And so if they're worth zero, it's worth nothing to save them. It's not worth spending a dollar to save them. So we need to sort of figure out a way to have a new kind of accounting system that says, you know, having those miles and miles and miles of cypress forest between New Orleans and the Gulf performs a very, very valuable service, and here's the dollar value we attach to it. And we haven't figured out how to do that yet.
There is a concept called ecosystem services, which people in the ecological and environmental community actually are working on. I mean, they have for, I think, over a decade been assigning those dollar values, but I guess it hasn't really seeped out into the mainstream economic model.
That's right. And that's one of the major problems, is that it hasn't become adopted by either the executive or legislative branches of state and federal governments, which could then, because all these projects are based on what are called cost-benefit ratios. You know, by law, the Corps of Engineers has to develop a cost-benefit ratio for every project it does, and the benefits have to outweigh the costs. Well, if they had to incorporate the cost of destroying natural resources that provide valuable services, a lot of these projects could never be justified. So you'd have a slowing down of that whole system, which you can understand the Corps is very resistant to. But I should point out that the problems we talk about in the film are not limited to New Orleans. There are cities, Dallas, Texas, Sacramento, California, are two that come to mind, out of more than 100, that have Corps of Engineers levy, I'm going to use a word in quotes here, protection, that the Corps now admits are defective. What New Orleans should have been in 2005 is a wake-up call, and instead, thanks to the obliviousness of the national media to this part of the story, it's been an excuse to hit the snooze button.
There are two things that I think are related. One is an ongoing attack on whistleblowers rather than an appreciation of the public service that they're providing. The three of the people whom you feature in the film really get hurt by trying to do the right thing. And the, as you call it, obliviousness of the media, or the unwillingness of both broadcast and print and with some exceptions, online media, to really do their jobs around this. And those things are related. What is to be done? I mean, you're making a film.
Yeah, what is to be done? That's a very good question. I had the opportunity to go to Capitol Hill while I was in Washington a couple weeks ago and start a series of conversations that I hope, well, let's say, I would like to hope may eventuate with the help of people who see the film around the country in getting some of this changed. This is a big system. This is a big system that has been working just fine, according to the people who populate it, if not to the recipients of its services, for a number of years. And so it's a big, heavy lift. But there is something called the Water Resources Development Act that's creeping through Congress. There's one every 4 or 5 years. And a range of people, ranging from the National Wildlife Federation to the Taxpayers for Common Sense, are trying to change policy in terms of how we deal with water in this country, and how the Corps of Engineers, if we're stuck with them, still has to deal with water in a more holistic and hopefully resource-sensitive way. So one thing is if people see the film and feel so inclined to do something, be to write or call or email their congressperson and say, incorporate some of these principles into the new, what's called the WRDA, the Water Resources Development Act, as it's working its way through Congress. As to the media, I don't know. You know, I spoke at the National Press Club a couple weeks and sort of called this what it is. It's not unique in the situation of New Orleans. There's a wonderful piece in January's New Yorker about how the decision makers in our national media, mainly editors and producers in New York, really didn't want their reporters and photographers on the ground in Baghdad to tell the whole story of the toppling of Saddam's statue. He focuses on that little piece of the story and spent a year reporting it. And reporters and photographers in Baghdad kept telling the decision makers in New York, and let us turn around. You'll see there's only 300 people in the square, and they're not doing much toppling. They're just watching the Marines do it. But the editors and producers in New York kept saying, I'm seeing the statue toppling on my TV. Cover that story. That's the story I want to see. And in a way, that's duplicated in what happened in New Orleans. You know, they saw the big spiral of Katrina on the weather map. Tell me that story. Don't tell me another story. I don't know what's, aside from going to the National Press Club and pointing fingers like I, as I did, I don't know what's to be done about that. I don't know how to shame those people sufficiently to make them do their jobs, except they should be ashamed that it took a guy from the comedy world to come and tell this story, you know, that they didn't tell it.
Well, and I think part of the big picture is when we look at the information in your film, and it's coming in all different ways. I mean, we had somebody on this program last year who built a sewage treatment plant which was 100% wetlands, and it did the job better than a built engineered sewage treatment plant, and it became bird habitat, and it provided water to vineyards. And what I think the public is just at the fringes beginning to understand that as taxpayers, it's not our job to make contractors wealthy, but to do what's really in the public good. And in all these cases that you're describing, doing the public good means preserving nature and working with natural systems, not feeding construction companies.
Yeah, well, the problem is we talk about in the film, as Mike Grunwald, especially, who's a journalist who's done more work on the Corps of Engineers, I think, than anybody else, points out, is that the contractors get contracts from the Corps. The Corps does very little of its own work anymore. And then the contractors give campaign contributions to Congress people who then vote for these big projects that from which issue contracts that these contractors can get. So it's a system called, in Washington, known as the Iron Triangle. And so the problem is Congress people are basically very happy with the system the way it is, because come election time, they come back home and they say, look at this big dam I got here. Look at this big bridge we got in our district. And so it requires voters to say, yeah, but that's not what we want. We want something that is more mindful of natural resources and the services they provide, because Congress people are serving the interests of the people who, you know, provide the money to run these very expensive campaigns. I mean, ultimately, it would be interesting if, and this is not way off the subject of the film, but not totally, it would be interesting if we could find a way to make sure that Congress people and senators don't have to raise millions of dollars just to run for office. That would be nice.
Right. Yeah, well, as many people have pointed out, the answer to a huge number of our problems, environmental and problems of democracy, could be quickly solved by campaign finance reform. But we know you, of course, from The Simpsons. This is Spinal Tap. As you said, you're a humorist who's now made a documentary. What was it like to make that switch to start making a documentary?
Well, you know, no fooling around. Mainly, I had 90 minutes to undo 5 years of media misinformation on a subject that's very near and dear to my heart. My first version of the film, I was not in it at all, because I was really concerned that people would be saying to themselves as they watch this, why am I listening to a guy from The Simpsons tell me about engineering? So I just focused on the people who really know what they're talking about. As it turns out, early audiences said, well, we need somebody to just sort of say why this is next and who's this now. So I'm sort of like a pointer to what's coming next in the film. But I couldn't afford to be anything but absolutely sober and serious about this, because I needed people to really pay attention to the folks who were telling them these fairly stunning stories. But in other ways, it's just like making any other kind of film. Filmmaking is two things. It's making plans and then having a backup plan when those fall apart. And it's hopefully getting a lot of stuff on film that you love and then throwing away half of it because you don't want the film to be too long. So those are the two jobs, no matter what kind of film you're making.
Do you have any sense of how safe New Orleans will be when the next Katrina-level hurricane strikes?
What Maria Garzino, the whistleblower from the Corps of Engineers who had responsibility for these pumps, says is the hydraulic pumps that are currently at the heart of the new improved system will not stand up to a hurricane storm surge of anywhere near that size. What that means is that those pumps are responsible for, as the city's pumps, the ones I referred to earlier, the wood pumps, pump the rainwater out of the city, because very often hurricane events have rainfall attached. So the city pumps pump the rainfall into these so-called outfall canals, which in a normal time will get the rainfall into Lake Pontchartrain, a huge lake that abuts New Orleans. Well, the Corps of Engineers has now put gates at those spots to prevent storm surge from the lake from getting into the city, which is what happened last time. If those gates are closed, the rainwater can't get out. The flood walls that the Corps built that failed last time have not been fixed, and the city will flood again. That's the scenario that Maria presents, and the allegations about the weakness of the pumps, weakness is an understatement, have been vetted by an independent engineer hired by a United States government agency, the Office of Special Counsel, and that report has been on President Obama's desk since June of 2009.
Harry Shearer is writer and director of the award-winning documentary, The Big Uneasy, and we can see it here in Santa Fe on Saturday, the 2nd of April at 8 o'clock at the CCA, and you will be there.
I will be there. I'll be doing Q&A. I'll do the A.
Okay, well, we'll do the Q, and we look forward to meeting you. Thanks for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you.
I'm very happy now to welcome to the program Brian Lush. He's the membership coordinator for the Indian Arts and Crafts Association, and we're here to talk about the spring market, which is happening at the Santa Fe Convention Center coming up very soon. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Well, thank you for having me.
So this is an event which is actually a couple of different events, some of which are open to the public and some of which aren't. What's it all about?
For more than 30 years, the Indian Arts and Crafts Association has been hosting the world's largest trade show to feature handmade, authentic American Indian art. And this is the first year we're having this event in Santa Fe, surprisingly.
Right.
So we're excited about that. The first 2 days of our market are the wholesale market, which is only open to the trade, and that's from April 5th through the 6th. And we kick off our collector's market on April 7th, which is open to the public.
The collector's market is something that anybody can come to. What kind of objects and crafts will you have there?
It's pretty much representative of most of the Indian tribes from North America, Canada, and the United States. You can expect to find pottery, jewelry, fetishes, paintings, that sort of thing.
Now, when you say collector's market, are we talking about museum collectors, high-end collectors, or a little bit of everybody? What about the normal, regular person?
It's a little bit of everybody, and it is open to the everyday person, as you say.
Tell us more about the IACA, the Indian Arts and Crafts Association.
Sure. It was founded back in 1974 by wholesalers, retailers, and artists who were a little perturbed by the fake, you know, art that had been infiltrating the market and hurting their sales. And what IACA was established to do was to help promote, preserve, and protect authentic American Indian art. It's a trade organization geared towards helping artists network with wholesalers and retailers and helps keep retailers, keeps their shelves full, as it were, with authentic American Indian art. And as a member of IACA, you receive a decal with the IACA logo. And with this logo present, this is a way of ensuring the public that what they're buying is the real thing and not a knockoff.
Brian, there's a book fair and there's a banquet. Tell us about those two events.
Well, the banquet is the annual IACA Artist of the Year Awards banquet. And this year, we've got a great speaker. We've got Kevin Gover of the Pawnee Nation of Oklahoma. He's the executive director of the Smithsonian Institution's National Museum of the American Indian in Washington, D.C. And co-chairing with this event is Catherine Stetson and W. Richard West of Stetson Law Offices. And this event will also be highlighted by a musical performance by Tim Blueflint of Shades of Rez, and a lively auction is going to take place, and that's going to be hosted by our favorite auctioneer, John Hornbeck of Red Shell Jewelry. And as for the book fair is going to be held during the collector's market, which is open to the public, and we've got a series of great books and authors. Another event that is open to the public is the IACA opening reception, which is taking place Wednesday at 6:30 p.m. at the Convention Center. This will kick off the collector's market the following day. And the next day, the book fair gets into full swing. And one standout project is White Shell Water Place. It's an anthology put together by native writers in the area, and we're really looking forward to it. And this event is sponsored by IACA and Clearlight Books.
Brian Lush is with the Indian Arts and Crafts Association. They're on the web at IACA.com. They're located in Albuquerque. Thanks so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you for having me.
I'd like now to welcome Rob DeWalt. He is with the Pasatiempo, which is the Friday arts magazine in the Santa Fe, New Mexican. He's with us just about every Friday speaking of the arts. Welcome.
Good morning.
So what's happening this weekend?
All kinds of stuff is happening this weekend. First of all, today is National Sourdough Bread Day.
Stop the presses.
Stop the presses. And tomorrow is National Peanut Butter and Jelly Day. So around midnight, if
now
you make a peanut butter and jelly sandwich
only
on sourdough bread, you're killing two birds with one stone.
Yeah, and having a nice midnight snack.
Yeah.
How did they? Are there only 365 possible events, or do some of them double up?
A lot of them double up.
Yeah.
A lot of them double up. Well, you know, all of these holidays are created by the industry to kind of make you buy more of their products anyway.
National Needle Nose Vice Grip Awareness Day.
Right. Like, this is also National Soy Foods Month. So you can kind of guess who sort
right.
of put that together.
And then there's, like, Festering Boils Awareness yeah. Month and things.
This is also a National Soft Pretzel Month, just so you know. Anyway, there's all kinds of stuff going on. I wanted to first give folks an update on DJ, the Pitbull Mix, who's still looking for a home.
The Pitbull Mix is still looking for a home?
Is still looking for a home, but not this weekend, but next weekend on Saturday, April 9th, from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. at Petco on Cerrillos Road, right there at St. Michael's. The Companion Animal Alliance is going to have an adopt-a-thon. There's going to be 6 adoption groups. There's going to be, so that includes dogs and cats, and DJ will be there.
Excellent.
As will 2 more Pitbull Mixes, who are also very nice doggies. Rocky and Phoenix are their names.
Those are good names.
That's not this weekend, that's next weekend. And I will probably be hanging out there with the dog if anybody wants to come and say hey.
I mean, before we get to really speaking of the arts, can you just tell us 1 or 2 fine qualities of this animal?
1 or 2 fine qualities of this animal. He is very loving. He's a snuggler. He's good with kids. He's really good with kids.
Excellent.
And other dogs. And he's kennel trained. That's 3 things.
That's,
I mean,
3 good
on.
Things.
Yeah. So that's not this Saturday, but next Saturday from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. at College Plaza right there in front of Petco at Cerrillos and St. Michael's. On to the arts.
On to the arts.
And arty type things. This is going to be fun. The White Trash Monologue.
Yes. We had Deb on yesterday talking about that.
She's fun.
She's fun and she's great. And it's her first, I think it's her first foray into acting, and she's really stepped up.
Yeah, it's her first sort of, I'm sure she's written scripts before, but this is the first one that she's actually put on
yep.
the stage.
The whole thing.
And, you know, I interviewed her last week. There's a story in today's Pasatiempo, but I always get nervous when I interview people with, like, a psychiatric background, because I'm like, what are they thinking? What are they thinking of me? Are they picking me apart? So, you know, but she's the script is very funny. I haven't seen any auditions. But I've read the script. It's a funny monologue,
yeah.
And she has a lot to say. I mean, it's sort of one of these things where at the end of it you go, wow, I thought my family had problems, but she's risen above it all, and it's going to be a great play. And I believe it runs for 2 weekends, right? I think it runs for 2 weekends. And if I can
check your Pasatiempo,
check your Pasatiempo,
ladies and gentlemen.
Right, but the opening night is tonight. At the Radar Performance Center at 7:30 p.m. And you can call 982-8309 to get more information and tickets. And see page 24 in today's Pasatiempo for other show times and an interview. What else is happening? I don't know. Gosh, there's so much. It's such a beautiful day. You know, it's supposed to get up to like 80 degrees this weekend. And then Sunday it's supposed
to
snow. Yeah.
80.
80. And then Sunday it's supposed to snow. So welcome to New Mexico.
Welcome to New Mexico.
But that means that on Saturday, everybody should go out to the farmer's market because it's going to be a beautiful day.
Indeed.
And they've backed their hours up. They're now in spring hours. They're open from 8 a.m. to 1 p.m. on Saturdays. All right.
So the Second Street Brewery, I got a note from David Barsanti, who's one of the many fine, fine DJs on KSFR. And they are at the Second Street Brewery Rail Yard for a Fela Afrobeat dance party tomorrow night at 9 o'clock. Free admission with video projectionist Greg Weiss, drummers Al Fate, and
Sean Woodyard, and many more. So Afro Funk Spinifex is the name. I guess Spinifex is the name of the name of the dudes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Spinifex. Cool beans.
Yep.
Speaking of pubs and beer and stuff like that, now it doesn't have a name yet, but the space that was formerly known as the Santa Fe Brewing Company Pub and Grill is reopening.
I've heard. From you last week.
Last week, yeah. But their first show there is going to be on Saturday, April 2nd at 7:30 p.m. The infamous String Dusters. If you're into
infamous String Dusters,
yeah,
are awesome.
Yeah,
they're crazy.
They
I
are.
Heard them there about 3 years ago.
Well, they're going to christen the space, rechristen the space, I guess you could say, and at 7:30 p.m. You can get tickets at the Lensic, ticketsantafe.org, 988-1234. This is I don't know if they've really figured out what the name of this place is going to be yet, but it looks promising. It looks like the venue is going to sort of turn around.
Yeah, the infamous String Dusters play bluegrass, and they do that, among other things, that really tight a cappella harmony from time to time,
mm-hmm,
which I love.
Yes. Yeah, and there's
and
what?
They play very well.
There's at least six of them when they tour, so
yeah,
there's a lot of harmony to be had.
Lot
but they do
harmony.
They do a lot of traditional and sort of new grass stuff. So
yep.
Go check that show out, 7:30 p.m. Saturday, April 2nd at the Pub and Grill, which is out there at on Fireplace off Highway 14.
Off
Highway 14. So that's going to be fun.
So you go down Cerrillos, and instead of turning off to go to Albuquerque, you go straight.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, you can still stop in at the tasting room if you want, but the businesses are sort of unrelated in that sense. There's a lot of openings that are happening tonight. Blue Rain Gallery over there at Lincoln Avenue is having Preston Singletary is having a show of his glass sculpture from 5 to 7 p.m. And that's today only. So go and check that out. Eggman and Walrus Art Emporium over there at 130 West Palace Avenue, just right up the street from the old Palace restaurant. I think it's across the street, actually. No, it's the same side of the street. Blow Up, paintings by Stephanie, and if I pronounce your name wrong, Stephanie, I apologize, Plikta. Reception from 5:30 to 9 p.m., and that's through April. Also on Palace Avenue, Manitou Galleries is having a reception from 5 to 7:30 tonight. Landscapes by Douglas Eggard, Harry Green, and Fran Larson, and that's up through April 15th. This one's really cool. Santa Fe Complex, Systems Biology and Nanoscience.
Yes.
Yes.
That's crazy. And you better register, because it's really hard to get into that. Everybody wants to go.
Everybody wants to go.
I love Santa Fe. Everybody wants to go to Systems Biology and Nanotechnology Art Exhibition.
Oh, it's great. It's
you can't sell out a heavy metal concert.
No.
Maybe
no.
You can.
And this is a cool one also. And it's along the same lines of sort of blending art and science. Dr. Woohoo is having a show from Pixels to Prints in the main entry hall of the Santa Fe Community College. There's a reception from 7 to 9 p.m. tonight, and that's up through April 15th. I interviewed Dr. Woohoo, and there's a story in today's Pasa Tiempo. This guy does some amazing stuff. You know what generative art is?
No.
It's kind of like art that's created. Well, the definition in the story is much better. But imagine writing code that creates random patterns that aren't necessarily random, and then turning that code into something visual that you can actually see. So Dr. Woohoo is sort of combines art and computer science and code and design, and he made my cover for my phone, actually.
He made a cover for your iPhone, which is very cute and
yeah,
semi sort of William Blake psychedelic ish.
Sort of, but his work is very interesting. It's hard to explain. Read the story. Let him explain it. That's today's Pasa Tiempo.
The Santa Fe Indian School and the Lensic are presenting Moccasins and Microphones, and we did a show about that on Wednesday, which was great fun. And it's at 5 o'clock on Sunday, Modern Native Storytelling Through Performance Poetry. And I must say that these people are some of the best poets ever. It was such a wonderful... They have a CD, which is great, and they've been working for years. So some of the people in this performance are seniors at the Indian School, and they've been doing it since they were in the 7th grade. And so they have become absolutely wonderful performers and poets. And so it's a must-see. There's probably not going to be anything like it again for a long time, because this spoken. They've been on NPR. They've traveled the world. They've been to the Balkans. They've done all these things, and a lot of them are graduating now. So this is the big moment where they're going to do this performance, and it's on Sunday at the Lensic at 5.
Will there be a new stable of performers in the future? Is this program
the program is ongoing, but I think it's reached a kind of pinnacle moment, and not to say it'll go downhill because it will continue.
It's just that this particular stable of students,
yeah,
right. They're ready.
They're ready and they're doing it.
Awesome. What else? Oh, there's a slide presentation on Saturday at 5 p.m. at the Travel Bug over there in Paseo de Peralta, called it's a Tibet eco tour. It's all about Tibet ecotourism, and that sounds pretty cool. That's at 5 p.m. on Saturday.
Yeah, we did that on the air too.
It's Mary Coulter weekend. Did you know this?
Yes.
Do you know a lot about it? I know this is what I know is that there's a bunch of events. Mexico History Museum and the La Fonda celebrate the architect who designed several Fred Harvey hotels, and did much more. There's a reception tonight at 6 p.m. at the La Fonda. Tickets are hefty. They're up there, but there's Saturday lectures and a Harvey House-inspired dinner also. I believe tickets are available at the Lensic.
Okay.
So you can buzz over there at 988-1234 or go online to ticketsantafe.org.
Mary Coulter was an architect and designer,
yes,
who did stuff that is still at the Grand Canyon, did stuff that is in... She worked on some of the parts of La Fonda. She had a really great influence on Santa Fe and on the Southwest. And is, I guess, very well known within architectural circles. I hadn't heard about her till we did the show on her, and is really quite an important figure in design in the Southwest.
Right, she's basically responsible for a lot of the things that you see around you that speak to Santa Fe style.
Yep.
Let's see what else. Cathedral Artist Gallery is having an opening on Sunday. Over there on Cathedral Place, it's a group show of paintings, sculpture, photographs, and jewelry. There's a reception from 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. on Sunday, and proceeds benefit the Santo Niño Regional School. And what else? Oh, Breakfast with O'Keefe. Margaret Wood, a companion to O'Keefe, discusses the artist from 8:30 to 9:30 a.m. on Monday over there at the O'Keefe Museum on Johnson Street. The small ticket price includes a continental breakfast and museum admission. You can get more information, I'm sure, at the website or by calling 946-1000. What else is going on? Oh, this is pretty cool. Rory Block is going to be performing. You know who Rory Block is?
Folk singer?
Blues.
Blues, okay.
Blues. East Coast singer-songwriter who is basically, it's her mission to sort of preserve the artistry and promote blues music and just sort of to preserve its roots and where it comes from. She does a lot of instruction and a lot of performance, and she's going to be performing at the Santa Fe Performance Exchange, which makes a lot of sense, at that nonprofit at 7:30 p.m. on Thursday, April 7th. She's going to be... She's been doing this since 1967. She knows what she's doing.
Yeah.
So go and check that out. Tickets, again, are available at the Lensic, so that's pretty cool.
I got a note from a reflexologist. They're giving a reflexology demonstration tomorrow from 1 to 2 at the New Mexico Academy of Healing Arts. And Jim Williams will give a talk and demonstration, followed by some free treatments for whoever shows up.
Neat.
Yeah.
Hey, Japan, Santa Fe Gin Cultural Festival.
Oh, is that coming up?
That is, I believe, this weekend.
Huh.
Festival takes place Saturday, April 2nd at the Santa Fe Community Convention Center on Marcy Street. 12 and under, no charge. There is a small admission fee. Donations are welcome. Admission fees and donations are going to be donated directly to the Japanese Red Cross in response to all of the horrible things that are happening over there right now. But there's tons of events. If you go to santafegin.org, you can find a schedule of what's happening and how you can donate.
Gin is J-I-N,
J-I-N.
Not G-I-N.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
So, First Wednesday Photography Salon is from 6:30 to 8 at the Photo Eye Gallery at 376 Garcia Street. And the artist presenting will be Dornith Doherty and Phil Underdown. And it's basically a place to go and check out people's photographers' work.
Neato.
Yep.
What is this? Jimmy Santiago Baca on Thursday is going to sign copies of Breaking Bread with the Darkness. The poet will be at Collective Works Bookstore at 6 p.m. on Tuesday.
Tuesday.
Yes.
Yes.
Tuesday.
And I will have him on the show on Monday.
Oh, sweet. Is he going to read some poetry?
Yeah.
Yay.
He's awesome.
Yeah.
He is an awesome person and poet, and he was in prison for so long. He was incarcerated from the time he entered an orphanage, basically, at 5 years old.
Oh, wow.
And then going through reform schools and ending up in jail and then prison and then maximum security prison. And he got out at the age of 26, and he has recently celebrated more time of his life out of institutions than in.
Yeah.
But since then, he's done innumerable writing workshops for prisoners and for all kinds of people, and has just elicited incredible work. And he was, when he was in prison, I just read his autobiography called A Place to Stand, which is crazy good. He was the voice of the other prisoners, so he would write people a poem in exchange for coffee and food and things like that.
Oh, wow.
He's an amazing person. It's definitely worth going to see. Tuesday, Collected Works.
Sweet. What is this? Oh, Callback, Santa Fe Playhouse on Thursday presents a new comedy drama by Bill Svano, I believe, is how you pronounce it, 8 p.m. on Thursday over there at the Santa Fe Playhouse. That is the opening gala is actually on April the 8th, but there's a performance on the 7th, and that continues through April 24th. There's a story in today's Pasta Tiempo on page 20.
Who's in that?
I don't know. There's no information in front of me.
Oh.
There is, let me see, I could flip through the story, but then you would have to take over here.
I will take over for
okay.
a moment. Also at Collected Works, on Wednesday at 6 o'clock, Gary Nabhan reads from and signs Chasing Chilies at Collected Works. And then on Thursday at 6 o'clock, poet Brendan Constantine introduces his new poetry, Letters to Guns. And then, let's see, that's it. For further information, you can go to collectedworksbookstore.com.
I knew this. I don't know why this slipped my mind. Jonathan Richards is in the play.
And Joan Darling.
And Joan Darling.
That's what I thought.
I'm just not awake yet. I'm
yeah,
sorry.
Well, no, that's okay. Joan Darling was in my favorite movie, which is The President's Analyst.
The President's Analyst.
1967, and she lives here in Santa Fe, and she's awesome.
And she's also responsible for Mary Hartman.
Is that right?
Yes.
Oh.
Just so you know.
I know now.
There's a lot of theater happening this weekend. There's Two Wives in India, also at the Santa
yes.
Fe Playhouse. Now, this is the final weekend, kids. It's Santa Fe Playhouse and Green Shoe Productions present the comedy. It's Leslie Harrell Dillon. Have you spoken to Leslie?
Yep, yeah. we had her on the air, too.
I missed that. I'm going to have to go podcast that.
Yes,
I'm sure it's
must.
Up somewhere. Anyway, 8 p.m. performance tonight over there at the Santa Fe Playhouse. You can go to santafeplayhouse.org to find out other times. And what else? Ooh, this
hey,
is...
Hey, Rob, yeah. Your shoe's untied.
Uh-oh.
April Fool's.
Oh, man. See, I was trying to come up with some kind of a jokey joke that I could do, but everything just sounded really mean or just not politically correct, so I just decided not to do anything at all.
I didn't do an April Fool's show this year.
No.
But next year?
Next year?
Maybe.
We want to do a Pasta Tiempo next year, and we want to do maps, like they do a map to the homes of the stars. We want to do maps to the homes of the artists. But it's going to be totally fake.
Footsteps.
We're
going to
make artists up.
Ah.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
good.
Well, that
and they'll all be you.
Yeah, of course. Of course.
Jaka will be presenting their small acoustic format at the Cowgirl Hall of Fame on Saturday at 2 in the evening, playing mbira, bass, and chromatic marimba, and hosho and acoustic guitar. That's all at the Cowgirl tomorrow.
Go and check out Michael Light on tonight, actually, from 5 to 7 p.m. over at Radius Books. I think I'm going to clog over there for this book signing. A photographer signs copies of L.A. Day, L.A. Night from 5 to 7 over at Radius Books, which is in the Kruger Building on East Palace Avenue. There's a story in today's Pasta Tiempo. Loving this photography. And the book is just incredible. It's one of those books that, like, sits around the office and everyone kind of sits around and goes, I wonder who gets to take that home. But it's Michael Light is amazing. The story is great. And I don't know. I'm going to go. I'm going to spend all night in Santa Fe today, just walking around.
Oh, good. That's a good day to do it because it'll be so warm.
Yeah, I never get to do it.
So. I got a note from Robert Gaylor, who has a video installation called Camilo, which means Twisted Waters, and it is on display at the New Mexico Museum of Art starting on the 8th of April. Oh, that's a week from today. Never mind. I'll read that again next week.
What is happening this week is the School for Advanced Research Colloquium Lecture Series presents the 9/11 Generation, Young Muslims in the New World Order. This sounds like a really interesting lecture. That's at noon in the Star Boardroom over on Garcia Street. There's no charge for these lectures. So
School for Advanced Research.
School for Advanced Research.
They're great.
Doing awesome work. Launch Projects is having an opening on Thursday. Interference, work by Rita Bard, Jamie Hamilton, and Lucretia Troncoso. There's a reception from 6 to 7 p.m. on Thursday, and that shows up through April. There's a lot of openings. I mean, more than I would generally assume there would be this time of year. I mean, there's always openings, but sometimes we don't hear about them.
Right.
But there are quite a few openings, especially tonight. There's one at the Public Library, the Southside Branch. There's one at Touching Stone over there on Old Santa Fe Trail. There's one at the Main Branch downtown. There's tons. Peterson Cody Gallery on Palace Avenue. A lot of stuff happening on Palace Avenue.
Cool.
So, what else is happening? You already talked about that.
I'll tell you what else is happening.
Okay.
Celebration of workers and the contributions made to raise families, support communities, and build the nation. It's basically a big event to thank those who are standing up for the working families of New Mexico, and of course, in response to the national attacks on workers and unions and so on. So it's Sunday at 4 o'clock at the St. Bede's Episcopal Church in Santa Fe. There will be an event with State Senator Peter Wirth, City Councilor Carmichael Dominguez, Miles Conway, Carter Bundy, both from local unions, and Ken Mayers of Veterans for Peace. And they're going to have music, and they're going to have an award-winning documentary called At the River I Stand, which is about the 1968 strike by sanitation workers in Memphis, which of course became the tragic site for the death of Martin Luther King on the 4th of April of 1968. So anyway, that's all been put together by various organizations in Santa Fe. For more information, 660-5018.
So are you a fan of Elvis?
Yes.
Yes?
Yes.
Like young Elvis or old Elvis or just Elvis in general? Or
Elvis in general and those very short parts in the movies where he dances.
I just love
watching Elvis dance.
Where he swizzles his hips?
He swizzles.
Anyway.
It's so beautiful.
The dance station, which is... Well, that's over there on West Alameda Street. The teachers and students of Dance Station are presenting Vegas, Baby. It's an Elvis showcase and performance and social dance from 3 to 5 p.m. on Sunday. So go and check that out if you like Elvis. Are we running out of time?
Yes. I don't know how this happened. I have so much more to read. I'm sorry we didn't get to everything.
I think, my watch and that clock and everything is wrong.
Amazing. Oh, well. There's a... The Santa Fe Public Schools Music Education Program is having some kind of performance tomorrow at 2 o'clock. Oh, my goodness. Well, anyway, we couldn't get to everything. But, Rob DeWalt, thank you so much for being with us, speaking of the arts.
Thank you. Happy April Fool's Day.
Happy April Fool's Day to you. So, okay, you've been listening to Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're streaming live on the web at ksfr.org, podcasting at santaferadiocafe.org. Thanks to Dot Foil Computer Services. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes. You can find me at facebook.com/radiocafe, and the email is radiocafe@ksfr.org. Stay tuned for the BBC, local news, then jazz a la carta. And have a great weekend, and be happy, be safe, be peaceful.
And if you play jokes on people, make sure they're not too cruel.
Yeah, and adopt Rob DeWalt's pit bull.
Yeah, please.
Hasta la vista. Thank you.